Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
We believe the borders of Israel and Palestine should be based on the 1967 lines with mutually agreed swaps so that secure and recognized borders are established for both states.
Well, welcome to the Savage Nation. Finally, we have seen Yasser Arafat return from the grave in the form of Barack Hussein Obama, who has told Israel to commit suicide and go back to the 1967 borders. Now, I would be all for a Palestinian state, as I once was a few years ago, had I not seen what the peace-loving Muslim Palestinians have done since they were granted the Gaza Strip. Remember when the Gaza Strip was given back to the Palestinians by the foolish liberal Jews who actually built a $12 million flower facility for the Palestinians, thinking that they would use the greenhouses to grow roses for Europe? Instead, they stole the hoses and the water pipes and then launched rockets against Israel. No, my friends, I am no longer living in the fantasy world of a two-state solution. It cannot be. It will not be. Nor does the Bible prophesy it. Now, many of you would rather just do this on a strictly rational level and talk about who Obama is. There's no question he is our first Muslim president. Now, whether or not he practices Islam is irrelevant. He sides with the Arab view of the world, and he is entitled to do so, just as you're entitled to not do so. He, in other words, is clearly an Arabist, and he is clearly on the side of those who wish that Israel would disappear. But he can't yet say to Israel, disappear, and little Jews, pack your valises and leave. Instead, he says, go back to the 67 borders, and all will be well. Now, he's either a fool, or he's just pandering to the enemies of America. We well know that Obama embraces the enemies of freedom and the enemies of America, and stabs our allies in the back. He stabbed Mubarak in the back. Now he's staring Israel in the back. So let me ask you this question at the beginning of the program, right off the bat. In the cynical age that we live in, do you really still care about Israel? You know, it's no longer 1975. It's not 1985. It's not 1995. It's not 2000. The American people are exhausted. We have a bankrupt financial system in this country. We have a man who is obviously in the White House who, in to my opinion, is playing for the other team. And so therefore, do you really care about Israel? And if so, why? Do you really care about Israel? And if so, why? And while you're pondering that and calling 1-800-449-8255, I want to read you what the Bible prophesies. Now, this is for those of you who don't believe in the Bible or fondly remember the teachings of the Bible when you were a little kid, but think that it's all rubbish. I'm going to read to you from Ezekiel, because Ezekiel is predictive of what's going to happen. There will be a war. Obama is laying the groundwork for a massive war against the Jewish people in the Middle East. He did so by beginning with the Tunisian revolt, the Egyptian revolt. There is no question there is going to be an uprising against the Jewish people, as prophesied in the Bible. And this man, Obama, who is so in love with himself, perhaps even blind to what he is doing, is simply trying to speed the way of the demise of Israel. And the word of the Lord came unto me, saying, Son of man, set thy face toward Gog of the land of Magog, the chief prince of Meshech and Tubal, and prophesy against him and say. Now let me pause right there. Who is Gog and who is Magog? We have covered this only once in my 16 years on the radio, when I had the Reverend Beowulf, what is his name? I'm sorry, I really have since forgotten. I tend to live in the present. Remember the great American Reverend who was a good friend of Ronald Reagan? Who? Jerry Falwell. And he and I didn't agree on something, but we agreed on some things. But when I asked him about the future of Israel, he quoted Ezekiel and Gog and Magog, and it's predicted as such. It says Persia, Cush, and Put with them, all of them with shield and helmet, Gomer and all his bands in the house of Togarmah, in the uttermost parts of the north, that would be Syria, and all his bands, even many peoples with thee. Be thou prepared, and prepare for thyself, thou and all thy company that are assembled unto thee, and be thou guarded of them. After many days thou shalt be mustered for service. In the latter years thou shalt come against the land that is brought back from the sword, that is gathered out of many peoples against the mountains of Israel, which have been a continual waste. But it is brought forth out of the peoples, and they dwell safely, all of them. And then it goes on to say that there will be an uprising against Israel by all of the neighbors around them. All of them shall rise up against Israel. And thou shalt come from thy place out of the uttermost parts of the north, thou and many peoples with thee, all of them riding upon horses, a great company and a mighty army. And thou shalt come up against my people Israel as a cloud to cover the land. It shall be in the end of days, and I will bring thee against my land, that the nations may know me when I shall be sanctified through thee, O Gog, before thy eyes. In other words, if you believe in the Bible as the word of God, God is saying the day will come that God will show himself when all of these despicable nations that Obama is in love with will rise up against the Jewish people. And how does it end? It ends this way, according to the Bible. My servants, the prophets of Israel, that prophesied in those days for many years that I would bring thee against them. And it shall come to pass in that day when Gog shall come against the land of Israel, saith the Lord God, that my fury shall arise up in my nostrils. For in my jealousy and in the fire of my wrath have I spoken. Surely in that day there shall be a great shaking in the land of Israel, so that the fishes of the sea and the fowls of the heaven and the beasts of the field and all creeping things that creep upon the ground and all the men that are upon the face of the earth shall shake at my presence, and the mountains shall be thrown down, and the steep places shall fall, and every wall shall fall to the ground. Let me pause right here. There will be a nuclear war in the Middle East, according to this. But it doesn't end there, because God goes on and says, and I will call for a sword against him throughout all my mountains. With the Lord God, every man's sword shall be against his brother. And I will plead against him with pestilence and with blood. And I will cause to rain upon him and upon his bands and upon the many peoples that are with him, an overflowing shower and great hailstones, fire and brimstone. Thus will I magnify myself and sanctify myself, and I'll make myself known in the eyes of many nations, and they shall know that I am the Lord. In other words, God is saying that war is called for, that there comes a time in human history when war is called for, that it cannot always be peace and love, brother. Unfortunately, sometimes man must go to war. And then what happens is very clear. And I will send a fire on Magog, and on them that dwell safely in the isles, and they shall know that I am the Lord. Now, what are the isles? What isles is he talking about? And so he says he shall be known by the war he brings down upon those who attack the Jewish people. That is how God will speak to them. And it goes on. And he says, so that they shall take no wood out of the field, neither cut down any out of the forest, for they shall make fires of the weapons, and they shall spoil those that spoil them, and rob those that rob them, saith the Lord God. The valley of Hamon Gog, and 7 months shall the house of Israel be burying the enemies, that they may cleanse the land. So he predicts that there will be so many corpses coming at Israel, that it will take 7 months to bury the corpses of those who rise up against Israel. I'll be right back.
Savage.
What America and the international community can do is to state frankly what everyone knows. A lasting peace will involve two states for two peoples, Israel as a Jewish state and the homeland for the Jewish people, and the state of Palestine as the homeland for the Palestinian people, each state enjoying self-determination, mutual recognition, and peace.
These are the words of a fool. These are not the words of a statesman. These are the words of a foolish college teacher who just talks out of his ear without any regard to the realities of the situation. In the next soundbite, I'm going to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the president is either delusional or an outright naked liar. Listen to clip 11.
Democracy depends not only on elections, but also strong and accountable institutions, and the respect for the rights of minorities. Such tolerance is particularly important when it comes to religion. In Tahrir Square, we heard Egyptians from all walks of life chant, "Muslims, Christians, we are one." America will work to see that this spirit prevails, that all faiths are respected.
Now, he's a liar. He's a liar, and he's delusional, and he should be forced to step down. We have a dangerous man in the White House. It was reported last week that churches are burning and the Coptic Christians are being killed in Egypt. And this liar in the White House says that they're chanting, "Muslims and Christians, we are one." How can you not see what's going on in front of your eyes? So I will go back to the Bible, since you don't believe me, because the Bible prophesies what will happen. And God says through Ezekiel, "And they shall know that I am the Lord their God, and that I caused them to go into captivity among the nations." So let me pause there. So the Jews were sent into the Babylonian captivity. And then he says, "And I have gathered them unto their own land." That would be Israel, you fools. "And I will leave none of them any more there," meaning in captivity. "Neither will I hide my face any more from them. For I have poured out my spirit upon the house of Israel, saith the Lord God." So you can believe what you want to believe. You can cynically say these are the words of ancient olive growers that were invented to bamboozle the ancient Israelites who were stiff-necked and needed to fear some invisible force. Or you can believe it's these are the actual words of God. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter what you believe. At the end of the day, all you have to know is that Obama is now feeding our worst enemies, and literally encouraging them to sweep over Israel. That's what he's just done. Again, I want to go back to several years ago when I said right on this radio program, 5 years ago, that I was in favor of a Palestinian state next to the Jewish state. I said there's no other way to solve this problem because it can't be solved any other way. And then I saw the debacle of what Ariel Sharon had done. A man who had begun his, actually was a great general, one of the greatest generals of the last century. He encircled the Egyptian army, by the way. Never forget that feat. Only to lose his entire reputation by going along with the American liberal Jewish mindset, which was to give the people the Gaza Strip, where they were supposed to grow roses and build houses for their children. Instead, they've been launching rockets incessantly at the Jewish people, without stop, without pause. They've used that as a launching pad to destroy any semblance of peace that might have existed. What do you think they would do if they got 40% of the existing state of Israel? Have you been to Israel? Have you actually seen what the, quote, West Bank is? First of all, the West Bank, so to speak, is historically part of Israel. It's known as Judea and Samaria in biblical terms. It has always been part of Israel. It always will be part of Israel. This whole concept of give it to the Palestinians is nonsense. If Israel went back to its pre-67 borders, they would lose the Temple Mount, the Cave of the Patriarchs, Rachel's Tomb, the Church of the Nativity, the Mount of Temptation, and the Via Dolorosa. These are very sacred sites to Jews and to Christians. They're not going to be given to Muslims, no matter what this a crypto-Muslim president would like to see happen. So I'm going to ask you again, before I go on with my viewpoint, where I say on my website, Obama tells Israel to commit suicide, quote, go back to 67 borders. And at the same time, he's going to give hundreds of millions of dollars to Mideast dictatorships, including forgiving a $1 billion loan to Egypt. While the Muslim Brotherhood is clearly taking over Egypt, he's giving them a $1 billion gift. And tens of millions or hundreds of millions to other dictatorships? Where does the money come from, you fools? We are bankrupt. He's going to borrow it from China. And who is going to pay it off? Your children will pay it off so that this narcissistic fool can continue to self-aggrandize, to continue to think he is the Messiah who has come to the earth because only he can do it. You see, all of his childhood was built around a delusion that he was somehow greater than everybody else, better than everybody else. And so the skids were greased for him. Every step of the way, the skids were greased for him. You could see it in the way he pompously holds himself, the way he walks, the way he talks, the way he is disconnected from the reality of his own words. Who would write a speech like this at a time like this? Who in the world would take this moment to one day call for granting amnesty to 30 million illegal aliens, and the next day call for creating a Palestinian state, but a delusional human being? Now, let me pause right here. At the end of the day, a president is only a man. Let's not say, oh, man, you have no right to say those things about him. He's the president of the United States. I say, so what? So what? We've had terrible presidents in the past. We've had thieves. We've had adulterers of the worst order. We've had crazy men in the White House. They're just men. This is an accident of fate that we are stuck with this man in the White House. And so, therefore, we have not only a right to criticize him at a time like this, but frankly, I believe we have an obligation to be critical of Obama. The man is a one-way street. He is a dangerous man. He is a lifetime committed pan-Leninist, as I pointed out, in trickle-up poverty. And I am telling you that if the man is not called on the carpet by his own party, there is disaster ahead for the United States of America. There is an analogy in history that I can call upon. At the outbreak of World War II, Britain also had a man like Obama, but not quite as extreme, who thought that he could make peace with Hitler. Neville Chamberlain went to Germany. He came back to England and he said, I have in my hand a piece of paper from Chancellor Hitler, he says, Chancellor Hitler. And I have just signed the Anglo-German Naval Pact, and there will never be another war with Germany. That's what Neville Chamberlain said. Of course, he was a delusional liberal fool. His own liberal party, the Labour Party, threw him out of office. They voted him out of office because they said that he was not a wartime leader, that had he stayed in power and not Winston Churchill, England would have lost the war, and England would have been Germany, and we probably would have lost the war as well. It all hinges on one man. We don't have a Neville Chamberlain. We have a Barack Obama. The problem is we don't have a Winston Churchill.
Savage.
This moment belongs to the people of the Middle East and North Africa. They have seized control of their destiny and will make the choices that determine how the future of the region unfolds.
We believe the borders of Israel and Palestine should be based on the 1967 lines with mutually agreed swaps so that secure and recognized borders are established for both states.
This morning, I had another talk with the German Chancellor, Herr Hitler. And here is the paper which bears his name upon it as well as mine. We, the German Führer and Chancellor, and the British Prime Minister, have had a further meeting today and are agreed in recognizing that the question of Anglo-German relations is of the first importance for the two countries and for Europe.
Yes, and there will be peace in our time. So we finally see that we have a man playing for the other side in the White House, as I've been trying to warn you for several years. I'm not astonished by the fact I'm about to present to you, which is that about 82% of American Jews voted for Obama. I'm not shocked at all, because I'm going to predict that no matter what Obama does, he could emoliate all of Israel, the Jews would still vote for him rather than a Republican. That is to show you how blind the American Jewish community actually is. But I won't get into the domestic political situation at this time. All I can tell you is that I finally hope that some of the people in America who were not sure about Obama will see him for what he is. He is a crypto-Muslim president in the sense that he has sided with Arab dictatorships from the beginning of his regime, and he will continue to do so. Only now he's showing, I would say, a larger portion of his true face. Now, what will happen, or what would happen, rather, should this disaster fall upon Israel, is very clear. Listen to clip 25.
Frankly, only a free and democratic Israel will protect Jerusalem for all faiths. Prior to 67, Christians were discriminated against, and Jews couldn't even go to the Western Wall. I think every Israeli in his heart of hearts, when he hears the 1967 lines, that brings back terrible memories of 55 synagogues being destroyed in the old city by the Jordanian army. and by what's going on elsewhere in the Middle East today, where churches, Shiite mosques, and other religious sites are under attack by Muslim radicals. Jerusalem is safe and secure today. We're very concerned of what would happen if indeed the 67 lines were implemented.
Right. And don't forget what's going on in Egypt, the friend of Hillary and the friend of George Soros, who's the master manipulator behind all of this. I pointed it out in a 16-page essay, which may or may not still be on my website. It was Soros and Brzezinski, those the Carter policy wonks, who designed this entire Middle East uprising. The Middle East is on fire. It did not happen by accident. This was carefully planned. And Soros is quoted several years ago as saying Israel is the stumbling block to peace in the world. Now, this is one of the most Hitlerian statements I've ever seen in my life. You may as well say that the entire fight between the Hindus and let's look around the world. Let's look around the world. I think that there are 16 conflagrations going on around the world at this time. In almost every case, it is Muslims complaining about Christians or some other neighbor next to them. In almost every place, it's Muslims on the warpath, whether it be against Buddhists or against Hindus or against Jews or against Christians or against communists or against agnostics. It is the Muslims on the warpath. No other question that you need to ask yourself other than, are you ready to commit suicide? Because if you're ready to commit suicide, you finally found your leader. 1-800-449-8255. I'll take some calls now on the Savage Nation, and we'll see what you happen to think about it. Sammy in New York, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, hi, Michael. How are you?
Yeah. Please, Michael? Don't ask me how I am. Just give us your position.
Yeah, I think that he's finally showing his true colors. I mean, you said a long time ago that Iran helped him get into the White House. That's where he got all that money from. And I think he's finally showing his true colors. Yeah, I mean, how large is the state of Israel? It's smaller than the size of New York. What's he going after here?
Well, the fact of the matter is you want to reduce a 45-mile width of a nation to 8 miles. How can the Israelis survive? Look, let's start with the top of the argument and discussion. If the Palestinian people were truly peace-loving, what would they have done when they were given Gaza? Would they not have shown their inclinations toward peace? Yes, they would have. And they would have shown that they were ready for a larger nation. But they've shown that they're warlike and they only want to commit war. Most of them were brainwashed since childhood into killing Jews. You know that and I know that. So how can you then give them a piece of land when they're going to use it as another launching pad against the Jews? Why would you do that? All right. 1-800-449-8255. Leah in Florida, fire away. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, so this is what the Secretary of State and Mr. Obama proclaim as their innovative new idea to solve the problem, going back to...
Let's start with the fact that it's Hillary Clinton who engineered this. Let's not let Hillary off the hook here. What kills me is that Bill Clinton goes to synagogues around the country, he gets $200,000 to $300,000 a speech, and the Jews throw themselves at him as though he is a god.
Well, they wanted her. I was there in 2008 in July, and having discussions with various Israelis. A lot of them were for Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton. I mean, ask them, you know, who are you for?
All right, so what's your main point? We know that Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton are Arabists. What else is new?
Yes.
Nothing. That's all. Nothing new. Okay. 1-800-449-8255. I'll ask my primary question again. Do you really still care about Israel, and if so, why? New York, WOR, Ray, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Michael, I pretty much agree with you, except that I do think we have to try something. I mean, even if it makes the Palestinians, further show their true colors. Otherwise, there's a world war is inevitable, and we might as well have it now while we probably would win it. But, you know, nobody...
Let's take your first statement that we have to try something. I would agree with you. Has the world not tried something? Have the liberal Jews of America and the world not tried something by giving the Gaza Strip to the Palestinians?
Yes, but I think we all...
Hold it. Well, let's look at the reality. What happened when they gave them the Gaza Strip?
Disaster.
So why would you expect it to be otherwise if they give them now the entire region of Judea and Samaria?
Because there are changes in the Arab world, and we still have...
Yes, they are. They're killing Christians in Egypt. Are you not aware of that, or that didn't make it to your local paper?
I know there are people doing
it. Well, wait a minute. Excuse me. The media is filled with whores and liars. Degenerate whores are in the media. They created a storyline that there's an Arab Spring. There's no Arab Spring. There's an uprising of the Muslim Brotherhood throughout the Middle East. Just because that degenerate scum, I can't even mention his name. I get livid when I think of it. That degenerate scum from CNN goes over there, the one in the tight dungarees that they're all in love with. And he says there's an Arab Spring with young people, and they have blackberries, and there's democracy, and that bastard leaves the Middle East. It's on fire. They're killing Christians, and that son of a gun is not there. He's in Cannes, and he's here, and he's there. That bum should be indicted for war crimes. It's the media that's lying. Don't you understand it? No, there's no peace in Egypt. No, there's no peace in the Middle East. There's a rising up of the most radical elements of Islam from Egypt through Tunisia. But because you don't read it in the daily news, it's not true? Are you that blind to the scum and the idiots in the media and what they've done to this world and what they've done to this country? How do you think this man Obama became president? Because these vermin in the media have brainwashed you, have hoodwinked you, have absolutely deluded you. And who is behind him? Many people are behind him. But most importantly, you should not forget the fact that George Soros has spent $48 million buying reporters and buying organizations in the news media specifically to brainwash you and to blind you to the realities of the truth. George Soros himself, astonishingly, but it wouldn't be the first Jew who turned on Jews. All you got to do is look back to Jesus, and you'll see the history of the Jewish people is quite complex. And you got to understand that when Jesus was crucified, before he was crucified by the Romans, there was a vote of the Sanhedrin. And what was the Sanhedrin? The Sanhedrin was a group of basically the Supreme Court of Israel at that time. And four or five, I don't remember the exact number, a minority number of the Jewish judges said, do not crucify Jesus. He did not do anything sufficient to be crucified. But eight or so of the Jewish judges said, yes, crucify him, because fundamentally he has gone against our rulers, Rome. So what else is new under the sun? You expect something new? Let me ask you, which side do you think Soros descends from? Which of the kings or which of the judges do you think George Soros descends from? I'll let you think about it. But he has had a lust to see Israel destroyed like I've never seen in my life. I cannot understand how a man who allegedly escaped the Nazis, how a man like that could have such a vendetta against Israel, I'll never understand. But let's forget George Soros. God, leave it to God. You know, I learned a long time ago in my life that at the end of the day, there is justice in this world. I've seen it over and over, not 100%, but by and large, I leave vengeance to God. I myself am only a man who presents his own opinions. Never make a mistake and think that I'm a politician. I am not a politician. I have no desire for higher office. I long ago have explained to you for the years I've been in radio, for example, guys like Glenn Beck with the large gatherings, God bless them, but you know what? These messianic talkers don't understand that they're nothing but talk show hosts with opinions. I stick to what I do for a living, which is give you one man's opinion. Now, I try to base it upon reality and on facts. So I'll go back to the facts. A man just called. He was well-meaning. He says, unless we try something like Obama's saying, we're going to have a world war. And I said to him, the world tried something. They gave the peace-loving Palestinians the Gaza Strip. In fact, you may not remember it, but I remember it distinctly. Moronic liberal Jews in America, moronic, self-destructive, suicidal American Jewish liberals raised $8 to $12 million to convert the greenhouses so they could be used by the Palestinians to grow flowers, they thought, and vegetables for the European market. The minute the Jews left, the Palestinians tore the greenhouses to shreds. They stole the water pumps. They stole the water hoses. They stole the glass panels. They wrecked the greenhouses. They did not use the greenhouses to grow flowers. They used the concrete bases of the greenhouses as launching pads for their rockets. So things have been tried. And if you don't learn by what reality is, then how can you learn from unreality? As the president must live in a dreamland, I don't know whether he lives in a bubble or he's just a stupid college type who keeps espousing the same rubbish that he heard in the Reverend Wright's church for all those years and in the halls of academia. I don't know what it is. All I know is that he's finally shown the American Jewish community and the American Christian community which side he's on. And it is not on their side. That's my opinion. Okay, I'll be back.
Savage.
Look, I'm not really shocked by Obama doing this. It's just the suddenness of him continuing to push his radical socialist agenda, or shall I say radical internationalist agenda. Just the other day, he calls for the legalization of 30 million illegal aliens. The government says 8 to 10. We know it's 30. Devastating to America. Now he calls for the creation of a two-state solution in the Middle East. The man has no concept of reality in the sense that this cannot happen. It won't happen. He could say whatever he wants. He's only the president. He has enormous power. He can kill anyone he wants. As you could see, he got the world's most wanted terrorist. He can launch wars against nations and kill tens of thousands, if not more, people. He can give billions of dollars or take billions of dollars away. He has enormous powers. But at the end of the day, Israel's a sovereign nation, and it is armed to the teeth. And they're not going to give away Judea and Samaria. They're not going to do it. It's just not going to happen. So why would he do it then? Politically, you have to ask yourself, why would he do this at this time when he's in the campaign mode? When you consider that 82% of American Jews voted for Obama, and many of them are donors to the Obama and Democrat machine, why would he do it now? I'm sorry to tell you, it's because there's more money coming to him from Saudi Arabia and elsewhere than there is from the American Jewish community. I mean, maybe you'd like to believe that the American Jewish community is omnipotent and has so much influence and power and AIPAC and you can't beat them. And my friends, that's water under the bridge. There's a new world order. There's far more money on the other side of the aisle, and it's coming into the Obama campaign. Make no mistake about it. So it's almost irrelevant what the Jewish community decides to do. He's already decided which side, which way the wind blows, the way radicals used to talk about it. And he's coming from there. That's all. He knows which way the wind blows, and is blowing out of Saudi Arabia. And they want this, and so that's what he's talking. That's why he's talking like this. 1-800-449-8255. The sad part here is that the Jewish people are suicidal, by and large, in the West. They continue to vote for liberal social policies which affect them directly, which affect the chances of their survival directly, as evidenced by this. But I can guarantee you, no matter what happens, they will vote for Obama anyway to the greatest extent. There's no way to change it. There's an inherent bias that cannot be changed. I know why it is. I know why it exists. It's built upon a bias within the psyche of the American Jewish people that I don't care to go into at this time. But I know what it is. And it's not very pretty, by the way. It's not based on anything sane. It's almost based upon something totally irrational and racist, incidentally. That's the way I see it. It's one man's opinion. So we now go to clip 12. Here comes the dollars. Listen to what this madman said today in clip 12.
We do not want a democratic Egypt to be saddled by the debts of its past. So we will relieve a democratic Egypt of up to $1 billion in debt and work with our Egyptian partners to invest these resources.
Do you realize what he just said? The country is bankrupt. And he's forgiving Egypt $1 billion like it's nothing, $1 billion in debt that they owe us. That he's just forgiving. And on top of it all, he comes up with the big lie of a democratic Egypt. Where is there a democratic Egypt when churches are burning and Coptic Christians are being driven out of their homeland? People have been there for hundreds of years. 1,000 years they've been in Egypt. They're being murdered. Their churches are being burned. And this delusional president of ours says that a democratic Egypt exists. Now, either he knows better or he's a liar. Do you understand that? So which side is Obama on and who is he speaking for? John in New York from WOR, go ahead, please.
Yeah, Mike, you know, what really infuriates me is that the media is talking about the fact that this is a major shift in American foreign policy But if you look at every poll since Obama made a speech, you see that 90+ percent of the people don't agree with his policy. So this is my feeling, that this is just one man pushing his own agenda and doesn't necessarily represent what the American people really feel.
Well, that we know. We know that he's completely out of touch with the mainstream America. We know he's not even in touch with the mainstream of the Democrat Party. We know he represents the far, far left radical segment of the Democrat Party. He is a lifetime Marxist, socialist, Islamist. Now, if the man's two fathers, he had a father who was a Muslim, the mother divorced him or the father left her, and then she married another man who was a Muslim. The man's primary training was as a Muslim child. I am not surprised. That's the part that surprises me. They're so allegedly so smart in banking, in business, in industry, in the law, in medicine. And yet they're bamboozled by this man. And I tell you, I know why. I know why. And I'm not going to say why, because it's a psychological answer that I can't even put on the radio, because it will be roundly misinterpreted. And I have enough trouble in my life, and I'm not going to add to it. How do you feel about this today? Let's go to Indianapolis. Bob, you're on the Savage Nation. Welcome to the program.
Michael, thank you. Listen, today, when I found out about this, a couple of things crossed my mind. The first thing was I wanted to know where Jimmy Carter was. And then I stepped back and I thought, okay, Jimmy Carter, who else is having a good day after hearing this? I thought.
But it's Brzezinski and Soros and Carter who engineered this. The entire revolution that's going on in the Middle East was engineered by the Soros-backed foundation, and Brzezinski is the architect, with Jimmy Carter, the grandfather of it all. I spelled it out in immense detail. I am not a prophet, but I know what I'm talking about.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Moment belongs to the people of the Middle East and North Africa. They have seized control of their destiny and will make the choices that determine how the future of the region unfolds.
We believe the borders of Israel and Palestine should be based on the 1967 lines with mutually agreed swaps, so that secure and recognized borders are established for both states.
I knew the day would come that Obama the serpent would finally show his true face. It was only a matter of time until it happened. I mean, he stabbed America in the back virtually for two straight years now, and most of you are still in the dark, not even understanding the danger we are in. For those of you who understand what I'm talking about, I'm going to ask you, I'm going to do something that I've never done on this show, but please bear with me for one, I would say 40 to 60 seconds. If you are a Bible-loving, Bible-believing, Bible-reading human being, I want you to read along with me a Psalm of David, because it's something that I read in grade school in New York. Believe it or not, we actually had to read a biblical passage in a public school of the United States of America. Now, of course, every kind of diseased filth is put into the minds of the children, and the Bible is now banished the way pornography was once banished. Pornography has now become the playbook of the schools of the United States of America, while the Bible itself has been put not only on a back shelf, but banned completely because of the vermin in the ACLU. I'm going to read a Psalm of David because it joins the Christians and the Jews together. It's something that's unified the people for a long period of time. And many of you will know it even if you've moved away from it. It's very simple. It says, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. He guideth me in straight paths for his name's sake. And though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I shall fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou hast anointed my head with oil. My cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever." Now, the reason I read that for you is because we are facing a new era in the United States of America. The crypto-Marxist President Barack Hussein Obama has finally come out of the closet. There's no going back into the closet. He is who he is. But he is not acting on his own, nor is he acting because he actually believes this or that. I want to go back to something that I put together for you months back, and I don't remember when, but it was called Obama and the Shadow Socialist Group Behind Egypt's Fall by Michael Savage. Barack Obama, I said, has been playing a critical role in making sure that Egypt, one of our staunchest allies in the Middle East, is positioned to become the next member of the Union of Iranian Radical Islamist Republics headed by Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. Every single word out of the president's mouth, every single move he's made has had the effect of stabbing Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak in the back, of opening the door to Islamist radicals taking another step on their way to restoring an unholy caliphate in that region. Now, I wrote this several months ago before Mubarak was thrown out, before the Muslim Brotherhood achieved the presence that it has, before the Christians were killed, before the churches were burned. I'll continue what I wrote. The historical precedent for Obama's actions can be found in those of another weak liberal Democratic president, Jimmy Carter. In the late 1970s, I wrote, the Shah of Iran ruled that country in much the same way Hosni Mubarak has ruled Egypt, through maintaining tight control over the population with a strong military and the support of the United States. When Carter withdrew his support of the Shah in the name of, quote, human rights, he enabled the Ayatollah Khomeini to return to Iran from his exile in Paris and assume leadership of the country. It looks very much like Obama is following directly in Carter's footsteps. The problem is that the situation is much more serious today than it was 30 years ago. Blame that on Jimmy Carter. Carter's turning over Iran to the mullahs has allowed Islamist radicalism to establish a soon-to-be nuclear outpost in the region. Mahmoud Ahmadinejad is set to expand his influence and power by abetting the overthrow of nations such as Egypt that retain ties with and receive support from the West. There is no doubt that Ahmadinejad sees himself as the leader of an Islamist union that wields power, that wields immense power, okay, over the entire Middle East and threatens Western civilization as well. Since the 9/11 attacks on the United States, the left in America has come out on the side of Islamist radicals. They cheered as the Twin Towers fell and American lives were lost. With the election of one of their own as president of the United States, the left moved even closer to realizing its aim of bringing down our country. It is not out of the question that Barack Obama is actually working to ensure that our allies in the Middle East, including Egypt and Jordan, follow in the footsteps of Iran in installing a radical Islamist government. It is not out of the question that Obama seeks the demise of our staunchest ally, Israel. I wrote this several months ago. What is becoming clear is that, like Jimmy Carter, Obama is on the side of Islamist radicals. When Iranian students staged an uprising after the rigged election in that country, ensured that the totalitarian government of Ahmadinejad would remain in power, Obama was on vacation in Hawaii and threatened the Iranian insurrection and treated the Iranian insurrection as nothing more than a nuisance. Instead of intervening and speaking out strongly in favor of the students and the overthrow of a truly heinous enemy regime, Obama declined to take sides, saying, "It's up to Iranians to decide who Iran's leaders will be." By not speaking out and taking the lead in denouncing the Iranian regime, Obama revealed where his sympathies lay. Only a few weeks earlier, Obama had delivered one of his more insipid speeches. Speaking in Cairo, he had called for America to end torture and close the prison at Guantanamo Bay in order to reclaim its, quote, moral authority. Obama's insistence that the people of Iran should decide who their leaders are simply ignored the fact that the Ahmadinejad regime had rigged the election. The point was that there was no way the Iranian people could decide who the leaders would be. By saying what he did, Obama came down solidly on the side of the Muslim dictatorship and rigging elections in order to achieve it. Less than 2 years later, the Cairo insurrection against one of America's staunchest allies, Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak, provided Obama with another chance to speak out against Islamist radicalism. Instead, he's again waffled and backtracked and stabbed Mubarak in the back by demanding that the Egyptian president step down immediately. Incidentally, he's out already. Nobody is saying that Mubarak's government is a paragon of democratic rule. What Mubarak has done, though, is to provide a stabilizing influence in the Middle East. He's the closest thing to a friend that Israel has in the region. He's helped Israel secure its borders, and he's kept the terrorist Muslim Brotherhood from gaining power in Egypt by outlawing them. Let me pause. That's yesterday. Today it's over. It's over now. So where did all of this come from? Let me speed up to the next point in my article. And I will come back to that when I return here on the Savage Nation. I will show you that the handwriting was on the wall, and it comes all the way from George Soros. All over again. It's the very man who engineered the financial meltdown of our country, who enabled Obama to get elected in the first place. Once again, the fingerprints of George Soros are all over this. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Ago in Cairo, I began to broaden our engagement based upon mutual interests and mutual respect. I believed then, and I believe now, that we have a stake not just in the stability of nations, but in the self-determination of individuals.
How about the self-determination of Americans who are out of work? How about the self-determination of people who are paying $5 a gallon for gasoline? How about the self-determination of the American people with regard to our border with Mexico, which is porous and being overrun, Mr. President? I'm not going to read you the whole article I wrote showing that George Soros' hands are all over this, but I want to refer to the article again, and we're going to repost it on Michael Savage tonight. The U.S. knew as early as 2008 that groups opposed to the Mubarak regime were already developing a plan to overthrow the Egyptian government. Now, I want to pause there. Remember how the media played it, that it was spontaneous, that it was young people with dungarees and blackberries who simply got together on a rave in the street? Nonsense. This was plotted and planned. And I can prove it. And I wrote a 16-page article on it. These are activists who were trained in the United States of America. They were trained by radicals in the United States of America. And so, therefore, this was not spontaneous the way the vermin in the media would have painted the portrait. But the fact of the matter is, if you look at it, when you try to establish a democracy in the Middle East, Islamist radicals move in and take over, I wrote. It's exactly what happened in Gaza. In the elections of 2005, the terrorist group Hamas was the big winner over Mahmoud Abbas's Fatah party. By 2007, Hamas had driven the Fatah party out of Gaza. And when Abbas, still the nominal president of Gaza, called for elections in January of 2009, Hamas said that anyone who participated in the election would be dealt with by the Hamas ministry or by other means. In other words, if you vote, you die. So that's what the term free elections means in the Middle East. It means that a radical terrorist organization will move in, intimidate the population, and make sure that its candidates are elected. It's exactly what is likely to happen in Egypt, I wrote 4 months ago, even if a, quote, orderly transition to free elections takes place. And I go on, and I don't want to repeat it again. But who is behind this is the question. I can't spell it all out for you again, but I want you to understand that this did not happen on its own. There are fingerprints of Soros. There are fingerprints of Brzezinski. There are fingerprints of Jimmy Carter's group, in other words, all over this. And I will go back only to that point so that you understand that I'm not making this up out of whole cloth. We go to al-Baradei, who showed up in Cairo only 2 days after the uprising began and was immediately named a negotiator by the Muslim Brotherhood. I wrote, in fact, al-Baradei had been waiting in the wings for quite a while. You see, al-Baradei, I wrote, is on the board of an organization headed by George Soros and Zbigniew Brzezinski called International Crisis Group. Brzezinski is the same man who supervised the fall of the Shah of Iran in 1979. Another board member of the ICC is Javier Solana. Solana is one of the most powerful figures in the European Union. And because of his Marxist sympathies, and his support for the regime of Cuba's Fidel Castro. Solana was once on the USA's subversive list. Former USA National Security Advisor Sandy Berger, who once smuggled incriminating documents out of the Clinton White House by hiding them in his clothing, is another board member, as is General Wesley Clark, once fired from his NATO command. Mohammed El-Baradei also sits on the ICC's board. So, ladies and gentlemen, I want you to understand this is a conspiracy of the New World Order. It is it's true Obama is the man giving the speech, but Soros is exerting influence on all of the policies and pronouncements of Barack Obama and his administration. And his influence includes promoting the Muslim Brotherhood to a position of power in Egypt. I will go on at another time. I don't like reading articles on the show because I know that talk radio is supposed to be a spontaneous medium, and I'm very good at spontaneity. However, when it comes to a situation as serious as this, with such implications as what happened today, I ask you to read the entire article. It's 16 pages long. I'm posting it back up on michaelsavage.com. It's entitled Obama and the Shadow Socialist Group Behind Egypt's Fall. And it was written, several months ago, before Mubarak was actually thrown out. But you have to understand these things didn't happen on their own volition, like the vermin in the media would have you believe. 1-800-449-8255. Now, let us say that all of that is well and good, but you would be in favor of giving back the West Bank if it would bring world peace. Well, I would, too. I would, too. I would say, well, not that it matters what I say, but let's say I would also be in favor of a Palestinian state if it would bring about world peace. However, let us look at conflicts around the world and ask ourselves what the Muslims want. In Afghanistan, Muslims and non-Muslims are fighting. The Muslims want a pure Islamic society. In the European Union, Muslims want the EU out of Iraq, and they want to destroy Western civilization and have Islam take over the European Union. India, Muslims and Hindus are fighting. Muslims are fighting over historic Muslim religious sites throughout the country. In Indonesia, Muslims are fighting Christians. They want to drive Christians out of the province of Halmahera. In Iraq, Muslims, Shiite and Sunni, and Kurds are fighting over government control. In Israel, the Muslims and the Jews are fighting. Muslims want to exterminate the Jews and take their land. In Kashmir, the Muslims are fighting Hindus. They would like Kashmir to fall under Pakistan's jurisdiction. In Kurdistan, Muslims are fighting Christians to drive Christians out and take control. They want a pure Islamic society. In the Maldives, Muslims and non-Muslims are fighting. They want a pure Islamic society. In Nigeria, Muslims are killing Christians. In the north, they're battling Christians. In the south, they're trying to maintain a military dictatorship. In Pakistan, Muslims, Sunni and Shiite, are fighting. Muslims are fighting over government control and fundamental beliefs throughout the country. In the Philippines, the Muslims are fighting Christians for government control. Muslims have been fighting Christians in the south, and in the north, they're trying to seek control of the entire Philippine archipelago. In Russia, the Muslims are fighting the Christians. Chechnya wants autonomy and has vowed to blow up every Christian church in Russia. In the Sudan, Muslims are fighting Christians. The Muslim regime wants absolute control and has committed genocide in the country, killing Christians. In the United States, we have a fight with the Muslims subtextually going on. They want the U.S. out of the Middle East, and they want the Western civilization destroyed, and they want Islam to sweep the European Union. No matter what you may read or hear, I am telling you that everywhere you turn, every conflict on earth, it is between Muslims and their neighbors. So you have to ask yourself, if Israel gave back the so-called West Bank, which is known as Judea and Samaria in the Bible, would peace reign on earth? I just read you a list of conflicts around the world. Don't you understand that this is only one of many conflicts where Muslims want something? Don't you understand that there's no end to this until the world bends the knee to Allah and Christianity and Judaism and Hinduism and Buddhism is ruled illegal around the world? Don't you understand what's going on? Have you no idea about the fanatics that you are facing? Are you that deluded with your hot dogs and your pornography and your baseball to not understand that you are fighting for the survival of yourself and your descendants? Have you no idea that if we lose this battle, we are going to descend into 1,000 years of darkness? Have you no idea what is at stake? As Mencken said, no one ever went broke underestimating the intelligence of the American people. I agree with him.
Savage.
We believe the borders of Israel and Palestine should be based on the 1967 lines with mutually agreed swaps so that secure and recognized borders are established for both states.
Now, many of you don't understand the significance of this particular speech. It's extremely significant. Don't underestimate the power of the words of the President of the United States. Israel has been now put in a box, and it's going to further inflame the Arab world. It's going to further inflame the Jew haters in the international community. And the fact of the matter is he has now started to water a poisonous plant that could devour the state of Israel itself. I remind you of the days of 1938 and Czechoslovakia, when the leaders of Western Europe decided the fate of that nation and said, as a result of giving this piece of Czechoslovakia to Germany, we will have peace in our time. It was only within a year that the country of Czechoslovakia ceased to exist. So don't say to yourself that words have no power. I believe that Barack Hussein Obama has just done to Israel what was done to Czechoslovakia in 1938. And I will now turn it over to the callers of the Savage Nation. The fact of the matter is, if the Jews were to go back to the pre-67 borders as Obama wishes, it would deny millions of the world's Jews access to their holiest site and force Israel to return the strategically important Golan Heights to Syria, a known state sponsor of terrorism. You also should know that Syria has just killed 850 at least of its own people, and yet there's not been one proclamation in the vile United Nations. Assad has killed 850 of his own people who want democracy in Syria. There's not been one policy position from that vile organization on the East River, the United Nations. Nor, aside from a few sanctions that the United States enacted, has there been any call for the overthrow of this vicious, murderous dictator. Instead, what does he do? He turns on the state of Israel. Instead of getting up with the bully pulpit that he has and using this valuable currency of the presidency to attack Assad and to make the world understand that we will not stand by while innocent Syrians are killed, and then doing the same thing about the dictatorship in Iran, instead he attacks Israel. Haven't you any understanding of what just happened today? This is a cataclysm. Sacramento Rob, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hello, Michael. Let me start off by just saying the listeners love you. We love you, and it's going to be okay because, listen, the world is constantly changing. You yourself said it the other day to a listener. It's changing right now. We can do anything. We can't do anything about it. So, you know,
I know the world is changing, but the purpose of an American leader is to make certain that our sovereignty is protected. So instead, he sells out America by saying we should let 30 million illegals who slammed across our borders declare new borders by having no borders. So what do you mean the world is changing? We have a man playing for the other side. Yes, the world is changing, and we need a strong nationalist to protect us from this changing world.
Yes, we need, and you are the hero. You're standing up and doing it right now. Thank you.
Nah, I'm only a talk show host. I'm a guy alone. I live alone, basically, in my own world. I give you one man's opinion. I'm not doing anything but giving you one man's opinion that may reflect that of millions of people. I have no authority or no power. Nobody is on my side, but my listeners like me. Fine, that's well and good. I'm glad. But I have no impact whatsoever beyond my listenership. Look at the Republican Party. They should have been all over this today. And other than Alan West, nobody in the Republican Party. Wait, Mitt Romney came out and said that he stabbed Israel in the back. Good for him. So maybe this will be the undoing of Obama. Maybe finally people will see who this man really is, a crypto Islamist that he really is. 1-800-449-8255, Robin, New York on WOR. Your opinion counts. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Mike, I'm an avid listener as well, and I have to say, the last 2 minutes coming out of the break was the Mike Savage that I love and that people thinking people love. When you give reasons, concrete examples, things like that, I've been a little dismayed, even though I have no love for the Muslims whatsoever, and as far as I'm concerned, every Muslim-based government is entirely illegitimate, but not because they're Muslim, but mostly because they're dictatorships. And I feel like, you know, there's a lot of empty rhetoric, and unfortunately, you've resorted to a little bit of it yourself. Those people who are true fanatics. They are fanatics born out of absolute desperation. They have nothing. I don't want to make excuses for what they've done. I have no love for them. But I don't equate necessarily the religion with the fanatics.
Well, I don't know where you're going. I don't know where you're going here. This is the same argument I've heard my whole life about drug addicts, junkies, murderers, thieves, rapists, that they did it because they were desperate. I don't buy that at all. I know poor people. I was poor myself once. I didn't resort to murder and rape and robbery to get where I am today. So I don't believe that you have to kill in order to get what you want. You could also pull yourself up by your bootstraps and become an example to your neighbors. The Palestinians were given the Gaza Strip. What'd they do with it? They used it as a launching pad. They could have shown the world that they're peace-loving and turned it into a Garden of Eden. Instead, they turned it into a Garden of Hatred. So what happened to that idea? Where'd you go? I guess he hung up. You see what I'm saying? The Palestinians had an opportunity when they were given the Gaza Strip to show the world that they really wanted peace. They could have turned it into a citadel, a Garden of Eden. They could have made it a new world. Instead, they turned it into a garden of rocket launching and hatred. Instead, they oppressed their people even further with it. They steal the supplies and the aid. So what are you talking about here? What world are you living in? You're living in a dream world if you think that by giving them the West Bank, they're going to suddenly dance the horror with the Jews. New York, W.R. Morris, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Let me just preface everything by saying I happen to be an Orthodox Jew, politically conservative. The problem is Jews keep making the same mistake over and over. They, unfortunately, were the cause of most of our own headaches. In 1948, when Israel was attacked, when it became a nation, was attacked, they beat off the Arabs, so what do? They invite their enemies, who didn't just want to defeat them, they wanted to slaughter them. They invite them to live with them. Okay? Flash ahead 20 years. They get attacked again. What
yeah.
do? They ask their enemies to live with them. Only fools make the same mistake over and over.
So in other words, you're saying the 67 war, when the Arabs attacked Israel on all fronts.
That's when they attack them, and they want to obliterate them. They just don't want to defeat them and take their land and make them God knows what. They literally want to destroy them. What do? We invite them to live with us again. Again, and when you keep making the same mistake over and over and over, you're the cause.
Well, what does this have to do with a president of the United States who comes out on the Arabist side? He's very much now shown exactly where he stands.
The problem
so
is that
why is it that the American Jewish community, which allegedly has so much influence and power, although I don't believe it anymore, why are they still so fanatically addicted to the Democrat socialist machine?
Because most of them don't have the proper education. They don't know enough about, most Jews don't know enough about their own history to have a backbone, to feel anything for their religion. Yeah, they were born Jewish. Great, you know, I had a bar mitzvah, yeah, and that's the extent of the Judaism.
If you were to poll the American people today as to who really cares about whether Israel survives or not, you know where the majority of support would come from? I'll let you tell me, because I think you know the answer. It would not come from the American Jewish community. Where would it come from?
It comes from the Christian Zionist community.
It would come from the fundamentalist Christian community.
That's right.
And yet, here's the horrible, ugly truth. If you were to poll the American Jewish community, they have contempt, they have fear of a very community that defends their own people in the Middle East. You know that, don't you?
Sure. That's a self-hating thing that, unfortunately,
the American Jewish community sneers at the fundamentalist Christian. You look at the humor coming out of the mouths of people like Larry David. You listen to some of this. You know what it is? It's all condescension. That anyone who believes in God to begin with is a fool, and that includes their own brethren. They mock the Orthodox Jew just as well as they do the fundamentalist Christian. And then they carry it to an extreme, and they say that the fundamentalist Christian, while he supports Israel now, he does so because in the end of days he wants to convert the Jews to Christianity. I know how these psychotics think. I've heard it. I have heard it over and over again. And so therefore there's not wide support for Israel in this country right now. Morris, I'm sorry to tell you. The support for Israel is very low right now, which is why Obama took this chance. He recognizes that most of the people in this country could care less. You know that, and I know that.
Unfortunately.
All right, thanks for the call. Just think Czechoslovakia 1938, and you'll know what just happened to get today. Okay? Joe in New York on WOR, you're next up. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Michael, I agree that what Obama did is terrible, but I don't think, I'm not concerned for three reasons. Number one, the Arabs will never agree to renounce the right of return. They want to push back into Israel, the pre-67 borders, over a million Arabs. That would mean the destructions of Israel. No one in Israel would allow that to happen, not even the left-wingers. That, what Obama did now, essentially, and that's reason number two, he has united both the right and the left in Israel because they're not fools. They see what is happening. Everybody now, do you know that Obama had a 6% approval rating in Israel? That may go into negative numbers now. And the third reason is
you say, wait, I want to, so no, but remember, he's our president, not Israel's president. So they say, even in Israel, with all the liberals that you have over there, his approval was only 6%?
That is correct.
What would you think Obama's approval would be amongst American Jews? 96%?
Well, even with that, I see some changes happening. Begrudgingly, people are beginning to realize what's happening. There's only so much that you could sort of look that away.
But they were hoodwinked by Hillary Clinton. They're hoodwinked by Bill Clinton. They don't wake up until it's too late. Don't you understand, Joe?
That is correct. But I don't think it's going to matter for that reason. Israel will never agree to take into it a million Arabs. It will be suicide.
All right. So, but now Obama calls for a two-state solution. So now the Arabs jump for joy and they say, finally, we have the American people on our side, the American president on our side. So Israel's been put into a box. If Israel refuses to do what the president suggested, where does that leave Israel?
Part of any peace treaty will...
No. Let me just explain it in my own way. Obama's put Israel into a box. If Israel does not go along with the idea of a two-state solution now, they're seen as the enemy of peace, correct? Instead of putting the burden on the Palestinians and saying, before I can recommend a two-state solution, you have to bring peace to your own people in the Gaza Strip. Turn the Gaza Strip into a Garden of Eden the way the Jews did with Israel, and we'll get back to you. But he didn't say that. I'll be right back.
Savage.
So 1938, Czechoslovakia is thrown to the wolves by the European socialists who say that Hitler is simply wanting to take back the Sudetenland because it was largely, listen to this now, the people there spoke German, it was largely German territory, and it was simply doing the right thing and restoring what was rightfully Germany's. It's identical. What a direct parallel to what we're hearing now with Obama, throwing Israel to the wolves. In order to make world peace. But it didn't work out that way. In fact, Czechoslovakia disappeared within a year. The whole nation was gobbled up. The same way Israel will be gobbled up if they do give back, if you even want to say give back, Judea and Samaria, which you know as the West Bank. So these are very heady times. These are very dangerous times. We're living in very, very difficult times for all of us. And I know most of us are interested really in our own survival, and we should be. But this is a talk show, and it's about, you know, local, national, world affairs. Sometimes we do health, nutrition, science, poetry, art. But I don't think that there's anything more profound right now than what we have in the White House in the form of this chameleon president of ours who is now showing that he is not really a chameleon after all. The song he is singing is a familiar song. And unfortunately, it does not lead to peace. It leads to captivity. It leads to the loss of liberty. In essence, it is tyrannical. It is a tyrannical speech that he gave today. It may have sounded nice. He didn't scream. He didn't yell. He didn't threaten. But nevertheless, he's put Israel into a corner. Now, the balance has shifted. Unless the evil Jews give the Palestinians the entire West Bank, they are the recalcitrant party. Perhaps tomorrow he will give a speech about Kashmir. After all, the man has a messianic complex. He knows he was put on the earth to save the world. He will then tell the Hindus of India to give in to Pakistan and give up the Kashmir region. He will then appeal to other regions of the earth, Perhaps he will tell Putin what to do and Medvedev and tell them, how dare you oppress the Chechens? Give them their Islamic stronghold. Perhaps then when he is through with that, he will go to another part of the world and he will tell the Nigerians that there's no place for Christians, that the people themselves should be determine the outcome of their nation and should be a Muslim nation. And he should go to the Sudan and say to the Christians, the reason you're being killed is because you're being recalcitrant and you're not converting to Islam. If only you would follow your Muslim brothers and convert to Islam, why we would have peace in the Sudan. You see, there's many things that he could do yet. This is only the beginning. And that's in between partying and traveling. Hannah in New York, welcome to the Savage Nation.
What I wanted to say is that there is no way that Israel will give up without a fight. Not this time.
Well, I don't know. Are you Israeli?
No, I'm not.
So how do you know what Israel will do? What if I tell you that no matter what Netanyahu said today, what if I tell you that I believe this speech was rehearsed with Netanyahu, and although Netanyahu had to make believe he was angry and rejected it, what if I tell you that I believe that you're going to see Netanyahu follow what Obama said today? I don't mean tomorrow, but slowly but surely this deal was worked out. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if we ever learn, is another story that this is so, I would not be surprised to learn, if we ever do learn it years from now, that the Pakistanis traded out Osama bin Laden in order to tell the United States that we'll give you Osama bin Laden, you'll get a Nobel Prize for that, and in exchange we want you to tell Israel to give up the West Bank, and you'll get another Nobel Prize for that. I'm telling you it's possible, is it not, given that we have a man who lives for himself in the White House. It's true that all politicians are narcissistic and egomaniacal, as we all are. But to an extent, most of us could never comprehend, I am sure. I, for one, cannot see myself in a tuxedo 7 nights a week or entertaining people 7 nights a week. There are people who can. God bless them. That's not me. But they're different than you and I. They have a different view of the world than you and I. And so, therefore, anything can happen tomorrow. New York, well, we'll go to another city. New York's very hot over this, by the way. But San Antonio's a good place to take a call from right now on the Savage Nation. Jay, go ahead, please. Tell us what you think.
Yes, I was looking at the Associated Press today, and it says that Barack Obama on Thursday endorsed a key Palestinian demand for borders of its future state and prodded Israel to accept that it can never have a truly peaceful nation based on permanent occupation. And this
right.
is inflammatory because it talks about the Israelis being a permanent occupation. And
right.
that they
In other words, he's speaking of the exact liberation theology that we knew he was inculcated with both by his mother, by his upbringing, by his liberal handlers, by his communist handlers, by the university handlers, and then, of course, by the reverend who he sat rapturally listening to for 20 years. So, therefore, this liberation theology is nothing new under the sun. But he's put the burden on the Jews, in other words, not on the Palestinians. And what he's done is, what you're saying is he threw gasoline on a fire. He did not put a fire extinguisher there. He threw gasoline on the fire. That's what he just did. Okay? It's as simple as that. Virginia, Michael, go ahead. Fire away. You're the last one up this hour.
Okay, well, yeah, it's true about the Jews that they have abandoned their own heritage, but that's also true about fundamentalist Christians as well. Sure, they support Israel just like most Jews support Israel, but they don't understand their own heritage, these fundamentalist Christians. 55 of the 56 signers of the Constitution were Protestants, and 29 of those 55 Protestants had advanced degrees in theology. They went to Bible schools. They went to seminaries. They wrote a theopolitical document when they wrote the Declaration of Independence.
I hear you. I hear you, and I thank you for your educated answer. I'll be right back on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And
now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Israel is today 45 miles wide. Take away the West Bank, we're down to 8 miles. That is why one area that every Israeli prime minister has insisted upon, like Yitzhak Rabin, was that Israel stay in the Jordan Valley. That's where our troops have to be located, along the Jordan River. From there, we can defend the state of Israel. But if you push us to the 67 lines, we don't have a presence in the Jordan Valley. We don't have our troops there, and Israel is basically defenseless.
We believe the borders of Israel and Palestine should be based on the 1967 lines with mutually agreed swaps so that secure and recognized borders are established for both states.
All right, the news is big today. Biggest news of the day is not that the French socialist pig has been released on bail and that all the women in New York have to run and hide. No, the biggest news is that Obama has stabbed Israel in the back and told Israel to commit suicide by going back to the 1967 borders. This is a major shift in U.S. policy. It is certainly pro-Arab. It is certainly something Yasser Arafat would have approved of. There is no question we have our first Muslim president. The Sperminator's mistress is revealed in photos. I have no idea what, look, who can account for a man's taste? But, I mean, it's comparing the Sperminator's mistress to Maria Shriver. It's unbelievable to me. Well, who knows? She was probably warm while the other one was cold. Obama to give billions to Mideast dictatorships. Where will the money come from? Well, China. That's all. And your children will pay it off. It makes them feel good. Iran says nuclear plant operational. Going down on my site, Bin Laden praised the Arab Spring in the audio recording. In that sense, Bin Laden agrees with Anderson Cooper and the other vermin of the media about the Arab Spring. The IMF chief, you know, the socialist pig, apparently he hired prostitutes from the madam who served Elliot Spitzer, the CNN superstar. The Gingrich campaign, duh. Well, it may be over before it effectively begins, no kidding. Chinese to view sensitive American military sites. And what do we get in return? Nothing. Representative Hunter slams Navy's decision to name a naval ship for Cesar Chavez. Well, it's the same as stabbing Israel in the back. It makes sense if you're Obama. White House shuts out Boston Herald because they're not nice to him. What else is on my site? Assad says Syrian forces made mistakes during the uprising. Now, they killed 850 fellow citizens. I guess they're mistakes like that, you know. But he'll be working on the 850 people. He'll see if he can resurrect them from the dead. What else is on MichaelSavage.com? Why is Soros spending over $48 million funding media organizations? French socialist, you know, the one we talked about, he bought a $35,000 suit. You got to see this story on the bottom right of my website. You got to take a look at the tailor. He's right out of 17th century France. Kicker, buy American cars? Yeah, but not in San Francisco. The last domestic car dealership within city limits. San Francisco Ford Lincoln closed its showroom doors. You see, the libs don't like American cars. They like to buy foreign. Obama sides with the Palestinians. No kidding. Knesset member says Obama is the new Arafat. Romney, God bless him, says Obama threw Israel under the bus. Hey, that's great. Maybe there's hope for Mr. Romney. Jewish donors warn Obama on Israel. Yeah, really. The day they start voting for anyone but a Democrat is the day I'll name Teddy Hetty. The debt ceiling. Remember the big problem of the debt ceiling? Well, Obama's called for billions of dollars in aid to Egypt, Tunisia, and Pakistan. What debt ceiling? Party on! Obama says we must change our approach to bridge division with Muslims. Also on the Drudge Report, Pakistan is rushing weapons-grade nuke reactor. Jumbo jet, obese pair told to buy 4 seats on a flight. A report says Russian troops are being fed dog food. Michelle Obama. She's on a conga line today, partying it up with Latinos. Well, it was for lunch. We don't know what she'll be doing for dinner. A new Bin Laden tape has surfaced from the grave. He praises the Arab Spring. In other words, in that regard, he agrees with CNN, ABC, CNN, etc. Chicago. Rahm Emanuel wants a casino in Chicago. I guess he could be an Indian. You never know, right? Maybe Joe Biden has Indian blood and can move there. Let's see what else is on the news wires. Well, just about everything imaginable is going wrong in the news. I mean, really, it's horrible. It's horrible out there. It's a horrible world. The banker got bail. Okay, he's out of Rikers. Now what is he going to do with himself? Indicted for trying to rape a hotel maid. I mean, why are they talking about the Unabomber? Like, what are they trying to cover up by bringing up Ted Kaczynski again? Chicago? Area deaths with Tylenol from 1982? They're blaming it on Kaczynski? What are they covering up here?
Maybe they're trying to harken people back to a time where there was a different sort of terrorist.
Maybe, well, he's a white male, that's true, and he has a European name, I see. Kaczynski is not Muhammad. Okay, I got it. I see. His name isn't Osama. It's Ted Kaczynski, so that makes sense. Obama pick for bench blocked by GOP. Obama has been handed his first Senate defeat of a judicial nominee. Republicans mustered enough guts to block the vote for this radical left-winger from the University of California at Berkeley. And that was the University of California law professor Gordon Liu, a horrible ACLUer. Republicans argued that Liu is a liberal ideologue who would bring his views with him to the San Francisco-based 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Schlemiel's. They objected to Liu's sharp criticisms of Chief Justice John Roberts and Supreme Court Justice Samuel Alito when they were Republican nominees. Democrats argued that Liu is a scholar who received the American Bar Association's top rating. Well, that does it for me. Anyone the ABA applauds or lauds, you know, is a dangerous radical. What else is on the news headlines out there? Oh, my goodness, it's terrible. Let's see what's going on over here. See if we can see something new for you. Alan West, my favorite congressman, says Obama's Mideast policy is the beginning of the end for Israel. How do you like that? Conservatives led by Florida Republican Alan West today were quick to blast Obama's game-changing recognition of a Palestinian state along Israel's pre-1967 borders, a decision that many describe as an existential threat to the Jewish state. That's a fancy word for saying, tell them to commit suicide. So, good for Alan West, good man. He's been there, he's seen the faces of these throwbacks. He knows that the Jews are our only hope in the Middle East. Plain English. Why don't you tell that to the American Jews, though, 82% of whom keep voting for Obama and the Democrats? When will they wake up? 1-800-449-8255. This is the Savage Nation.
I was, you know, I'm an older guy, and I have two mature children, okay? I raised the children, and I know certain things about raising children. So I had forgotten most of what went on. My son was up and just happened to be here for this great news, and we've been talking about it for 2 days before he went home. And then we started reminiscing about his childhood, and I don't know how it came up, but he said, hey, Dad, you know what came back to me? I said, what? Now, remember, he's a grown man. He said, you know why I don't smoke? I said, no, I don't remember. He said, do you remember when I was a little kid around 8, 9, or 10? We were in San Francisco, and you said to me, I saw somebody smoking, and I thought it looked great. And he said, you saw me looking at the guy smoking, and something registered in your mind, and you said to me, hey, would you like to try a cigarette? And I said, sure. And he said, you went to a machine and you bought a pack of Lucky Strikes unfiltered, and you lit the cigarette for me, and you gave it to me. And he said, I inhaled it. I almost died. He said, I almost puked. I got sick from it. He said, I never, ever put a cigarette to my mouth again. And he said, I got to tell you something else, Dad. He said, the same thing was done with me with alcohol. He said, you gave me a scotch when I was young. He said, I spit it out. He said, I drink, but really, I really don't like the taste of alcohol. I said, I had no idea. He said, yeah, thank you for that. So I'm passing it on because there's a lot of young fathers out there who are looking for tips on how to raise children and keep them away from alcohol, keep them away from cigarettes. You want to keep them away from drugs? Keep them away from cigarettes. Don't believe what the liberals tell you. Cigarettes are a gateway to marijuana. Marijuana is the number one gateway drug to every other drug in the cornucopia of drug usage. Trust me on that one. Okay? Trust me on that one. I don't need some expert from Harvard who's so screwed up that he can only teach at Harvard to tell me what's right or wrong. I'm telling you, cigarettes are a gateway to marijuana, and marijuana is a gateway to every other drug. And don't call me on any of these topics. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone.
This is the Savage Nation.
If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone, or the times they are a-changing.
We believe the borders of Israel and Palestine should be based on the 1967 lines with mutually agreed swaps so that secure and recognized borders are established for both states.
And keep your eyes wide, the chance won't come again. And don't speak too soon, for the wheel's still in spin.
This is a radical shift in U.S. policy towards Israel. You know, just a number of years ago, in 2004, the state of Israel received American guarantees that at the end of the day, Israel would not be forced to withdraw to those 1967 lines, that Israel had a right to defensible borders. Frankly, the 1967 lines are not defensible. Israel today is 45 miles wide. You put us back to the 67 lines, we are 8 miles wide. The state of Israel can't be defended in those dimensions.
Or he that gets hurt will be he who has stalled. The battle outside raging will soon shake your windows and rattle your walls. For the times they are a-changing.
We're talking about the vermin in the media. Men like Anderson Cooper, who was so in love with his own image that he doesn't understand that he himself has become the enemy of freedom. That during the riots in Egypt a few months ago, he was up excited on CNN talking about the young men in tight dungarees with Blackberries who were simply demanding freedom and the overthrow of Mubarak. And now we wake up and Christians are being killed, churches are being burned, and there's no Anderson Cooper or anyone else from the American media to tell you what is actually going on in Egypt. I told you on this show what would happen. I told you the Muslim Brotherhood would rise up. And many of you heard me. Many of you believed me. Many of you understood I saw what was coming. But unfortunately, not enough of you to have stood up to the big lie. So again, maybe you want to rename this show from the Savage Nation to Standing Up to the Big Lie. Because to me, there's a big lie coming out of this White House virtually every second. I realized that it was said back in the days of Hitler by his propaganda minister that if you tell a big lie often enough, it will become the truth. And so if Anderson Cooper keeps talking about the Arab Spring over and over again, maybe you won't know about the Christians being killed throughout the Middle East. If the White House keeps calling illiterate gutter rats poets, eventually you will start to think that illiterate gutter rats are poets. But you're not going to convince me of either. You know, recently, a former Prime Minister of England, whose name I forget, he was a cohort of Bill Clinton's. I forget his name. It's almost unimportant. He was a nonentity when he was Prime Minister. Another liberal fraud said that looking backwards, the reason that England has been suffering so many terror attacks is because they were so PC, they were afraid to say anything about the growing militancy and hatred and violence of the Muslim population. Well, my friends, there comes a time when you have to decide which side of the line you're on. You better decide right now because you're losing your country. You better decide right now when it reaches a point like this where the White House invites a man who glorifies the killing of cops, a man who debases the English language, a man who is as literate as they come and calls him a poet. You better decide which side of the line you're standing on. Lutfi in New York, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I'm with King, and I'm a Muslim. I pray 5 times, and I fast, and I do everything in a mosque. And I'm with him on this one because there's a lot of stuff in mosque we don't like, and we need somebody some our people to do it, but as for our people, they're doing nothing. So go, King, go for it. Yes, we will.
You know, Lutfi, it's interesting that you called. I didn't think I'd get one Muslim calling, but we had several. I saw several Muslims, rather, speaking there who I was impressed with because they're taking a lot of risk in doing so. One woman sat in the front row. She said she's been a Muslim since she came here. Her whole family has been peace-loving, but whenever she's raised the issue in a mosque about some of the hate she's hearing coming out of the imam's mouth, she said they've been vilified by the community. They're no longer invited to potluck dinners at their mosque, and they're looked upon with anger by people in the mosque. Is this something that happens to you?
You know, I did confront one of the imam one time, and I told him, if I want to hear what he just said right there, I could open the 10-10 winds and I hear the news. We're here just to... you know, listen to the Quran, and that's all. I don't want to hear any politics when I'm praying.
You know, it's very interesting. Now, this is the most essential point of the hearings. Most religions are apolitical in the United States of America. I mean, I've been in churches and synagogues my entire life. It is true that in the liberal branches of Christianity and Judaism, they have blurred the line between religion and politics. I don't find that in the Orthodox, rather the fundamentalist Christian churches. I never found that in the Orthodox Jewish communities. They generally are apolitical. They never bring it in there. They do the Bible, and God. They never do politics. In fact, they're religious about not doing politics, to be frank with you.
You know, if a man interrupts you, too much of everything is too much sometimes. So, my community or the Muslim community, they need to do more. They need to be more open, and the parents, especially the parents, they supposed to sit and talk with their kids because kids...
Are these mainly foreign-born imams who are coming in and poisoning the flock?
I say yes.
Okay. Well, let's let it go at that. I don't want to, you know, have you on the spot here.
Savage.
TSA, we all have problems with it. Yeah, we like what they do, but what about what they do to people that they shouldn't do? Michael Graybull has written extensively about the TSA's latest security measure, the back scatter machines, and whether they are safe for flyers or not. I don't believe they are. Well, he's here today to tell us how the government may not be telling us the truth about how dangerous these machines may really be. Michael, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you for having me.
Are we really safer because of these backscatter machines?
That's an interesting question. You have to sort of weigh the cost-benefit analysis. What we know on the machines is that these came out after the underwear bomber on Christmas Day 2009. He sort of brought to the fore this sort of long-standing problem that the metal detector does not detect explosive, it does not detect non-metallic things. So the TSA had been testing and using this machine in limited degree because it essentially sees under your clothing to see if you've got explosives strapped to your waist or if you have a fanny pack. And the plan after this incident was not to use them as a minor part of security, but as sort of the major or a major part of security as a part or as sort of the method for primary screening and having them at 1,800 of the 2,200 security lanes that we have in our country. So what it does is it closes this gap that they have at the airport checkpoints where, you know, they don't have a really great way of testing for explosives or testing for things that the other machines can't. But since these have come out, there's been a lot of questions about, well, how much radiation do they give off? And what are the long-term consequences of that, given that our plans now are to put hundreds of millions of people through these machines every year? And the evidence that we have so far, the tests that TSA has done and has published, show that it is a very low amount of radiation when you compare it to a dental X-ray. When you compare it to a plane flight or the background radiation that we get on a normal day on Earth. What happened recently was that there are several scientists with expertise in imaging and cancer who have now sent a letter to the White House science advisor looking at these tests and questioning them and saying, you know, this isn't really sufficient to tell the public that these are 100% safe, that there's nothing to worry about, that the science is completely verified and more testing should be done.
How much of a cancer risk does the TSA claim these machines actually present for people?
So the TSA says that they have no or a very minimal cancer risk. They say it's equivalent to about 2 minutes of flying. A independent researcher looked at the she didn't look at the machines herself. She looked at the data that TSA has put up on its website, and she also looked at it. This is an expert on medical X-rays. She said it's truly trivial. A passenger would have to undergo 50 airport scans to reach the level of a dental X-ray, 1,000 for a chest X-ray, and 4,000 to reach the level of a mammogram. What we don't there's essentially two problems here with the tests that TSA has done. Two main problems. There's a few others we can get into, but these are real problems in the science. One is the device that they used to test these machines is called an ion chamber. This is a typical kind of radiation measurement device that's used to test medical equipment. What the scientists who I've spoken with have told me is that there's essentially no ideal machine to test the Baxcatter X-rays, because the Baxcatter X-rays is essentially a high-speed pencil beam that rapidly moves across your body, up and you know across and up and down your body. So to have this device that reads on a specific point, it gets overwhelmed by the amount of radiation that this X-ray deposits in a short amount of time. The second problem, the second unknown that we have in the science field, is that there, you know, we don't know a lot about the what the cancer risk is for low levels of radiation. We use kind of a model that is somewhat controversial, I understand, in the medical world, and has a lot of uncertainty in it. So that's sort of another issue here. So these scientists are saying, you know, TSA is sort of presenting this as a question of science is sound. We know everything about them, completely safe, and the scientists are saying, wait, there's a whole, there is this medical question, and if we're going to be using this for this many people, we should be subjecting them to the same rigorous tests that we use in the medical field.
Well, why are independent scientists not being allowed to reproduce results which claim that these machines are safe?
So when I asked the TSA this, they did not answer my question directly, but I did find a congressional hearing back in March where a top official, a guy there named by his name is Robin Kane, he's head of security technology, and his answer was, well, we have done these independent tests. It was the FDA, the NIST, and we had the Johns Hopkins Applied Physics Laboratory look at it. But the issue of why not give it to the very professors who are criticizing it, why not give it to them, give them a full machine, and let them test it? The answer was that, well, if we give out too much public information about these machines, then we may, you know, essentially tip off somebody who wants to evade detection. And that has been kind of the answer that I've heard scientists have gotten privately about it, and that's the answer that they gave at the congressional hearing.
Now, so you're saying passengers should opt for the pat-down instead?
You know, my wife and I have had this debate. You know, if, when we go to the airport next time, when we go to the airport with our child the next time, which one do we use? And I think it ultimately comes down to your personal feeling about being touched if you're being patted down. Obviously, if you're patted down, there's no radiation involved, so you don't have any concern about that. The TSA and even the scientists who are raising questions about it say it is a very low level of radiation. You know, but some of them have said to me, I don't want to go through this machine myself, and some of them have said, I have no problems with it. You know, I had problems with it, but now I've looked at the study and I looked at the research, I don't think it's a problem, and I have no problems going through with it. For me, I guess I'll have to see when I go through there, but I wouldn't have a problem with I don't have a personal problem with the pat down, living in New York, on going through subways, being in crowded elevators. So to me, that might be the better option.
Well, isn't the concentration of radiation on the skin a factor?
So, yeah, so this was sort of the original question. If people who've been following this issue closely might remember that these same scientists at the UC, University of California, San Francisco, raised questions almost a year ago about what the TSA was revealing. And the TSA was putting out, here's what the dose is to the body, the overall dose of the body. And they said, well, that's not the way you should look at this, because the way that these machines work is that they essentially emits a low intensity beam that bounces off of your skin and bounces. Just to be very accurate about it, the radiation is absorbed by your skin, is absorbed a little by the underlying tissue, but a lot of it reflects back. Doesn't go through entirely through your body like a medical X-ray would. What these scientists were saying is what you want to be measuring is how much of the dose of the skin. This, again, in science is not a perfect measurement the science world has settled on. But the TSA, when they estimated this using a software program, found that it would be about twice as much as the overall dose to the skin, but still an extremely low level compared to what we get on a normal daily basis. And, you know, there are factors of you'd have to go through these things tens of thousands of times to meet your annual dose level.
Michael Graybull, this is incredible news. Thanks for being with us on the Savage Nation.
Thanks, Michael. It's been good to be here. I wanted to point listeners to ProPublica.org. And also, if there are any TSA screeners listening, I don't want to quote you, but I'd like to learn more about what you know. So please go on the website or send me an email through the website or through Twitter at Michael Graybull.
I'll be right back.
Savage.
Now, I want to now lead into the word culture wars, because when I first began in radio, the culture wars were everywhere, and these were big discussion topics. I'm going to read you some of these discussion topics from the 10 years ago or 15 years ago and ask you what happened to the culture wars: abortion, animal rights, bilingual education, creation, evolution, family values, death penalty, drugs, flag burning, feminism, gun politics, law and order, media bias in the U.S., moral absolutism versus moral relativism, multiculturalism, permissivism, political correctness, euthanasia, secularism and secularization, the so-called separation of church and state, sexual education, stem cell research. Has triggered a thought in your mind. Each one is a sort of explosive device. And yet, do you hear anyone discussing 99% of those topics anymore? Now, you wouldn't expect it to be discussed by anyone on the left, because they've won on virtually every one of those points. I can go right down the list. It's as though the culture wars are over and the radical communist left has won. So what is left for them to do? If they've won on the culture war front, what's left but to take away your dignity? And then after they take away your dignity and they take away your guns, they will take you away and put you into a re-education camp, as has been done by every Marxist revolution in the history of this sad earth. That's what's coming unless you start to understand what's at stake. Unless you stand up and fight back against these evil degenerates. Make no mistake about it. It's not just simply a choice between one way of looking at things and another, just a different lifestyle, just a different opinion. No, they're going after your dignity, then your guns, and then your freedom. That's exactly all I have left to take down. They've done everything else. They've debased virtually everything else that was worth holding on to in this society. They've beaten you on every level. I put up the good fight. I fought the good fight. When my day comes that I have to leave the earth, if I have a moment to think about it, I'll say, well, at least I fought the degenerate Bolsheviks with everything I had. I gave it everything I could. I threw everything I could at the enemy.
Now you say, well, okay, you've done very well doing it. I did very well doing it, but it ain't over yet. I've also paid a very high price, and I don't want to sit here and cry to you. That's my problem. I took on a government and I lost. Do you understand that? I took on a government and I lost. The evil British government, the phony, fake, conservative British government under whatever his name is, who came along and promised that they would take my name off that list of banned individuals, joined with the communists, the so-called Labour Party, and kept me on a list with murderers and terrorists, which is a shocking thing to think that the vermin in the media won't even cover the story. But I'm not here to play victim. I'm a big, big man. I realize I got myself into trouble by speaking the truth to power. And I have to dig myself out of the hole. And I want to thank all of you who have and continue to contribute to the legal fund. Without you, I would have been buried a long time ago. But thankfully, I have a fund and I'm fighting them and I haven't given up. I want you to know that. But there are other fights to be had, both domestic and foreign. And the fact of the matter is, you're not fighting them. When have you last fought over any of these issues? When have you last called a radio show and heard a discussion about abortion, about animal rights, family values? Why, that went out with the with Newt Gingrich. Death penalty? When have you last talked about the death penalty? When have you last talked about the drug war and the drug war's failures? When have you last talked about flag burning, about feminism, about the media bias in the U.S.? Well, we do that on a fairly regular basis. We know what that is. Have you last heard anyone fighting over multiculturalism and how it's devastated the dominant culture in the society and how multiculturalism is a code word for attacking whitey? Have you last, when have you last heard anyone arguing over euthanasia? You've given up on that. When they put your grandmother to sleep because they don't have the money to take care of her, you'll say, oh, well, I guess it's better that way. Then there's more money in the Obamacare system for the drug addict. When have you last heard anyone arguing over about breaking churches off war memorials, breaking crosses off war memorials, with the which the communists do? Have you recently discussed abstinence as opposed to sexual mania? Have you recently heard a discussion or an argument over stem cell research? No. Since Obama, the Marxist, has come to power, they have assumed they won all of these battles. And with the check-pants Republicans running the other side, they have won on all of these issues. So I'm trying to tell you why I'm so agitated over Obama continuing to not only degrade and denigrate the United States of America, but the language itself, the way all Marxists work. I've told you what they do. They destroy the culture, first from within and then from without. But he glorifies in it. He glories in his decimation of everything decent about our society, doesn't he? He literally takes a certain, you can almost taste the pleasure he gets in inviting an illiterate gutter rat to the White House. He has tremendous pleasure in what he is doing. And there's not a word coming out of the media on this. You may hear it here and there on talk radio. I think it's a pretty big topic on talk radio, what he did by calling this garbage poetry when we know it isn't poetry. And yet he invited these failures from the universities and from the streets and from the record companies, obviously in order to appease and appeal to a certain base levels of the electorate. But some of them actually had the nerve to compare rap music to Shakespeare. I doubt that they've ever read Shakespeare. I don't think they could quote anything from Shakespeare. But listen to clip 24 when you'll hear one of these illiterates invited onto the Fix News Network in 24.
So I think you can pull out lyrics from Shakespeare, and they would be offensive, you know, kind but, of but under these standards.
See the word offensive? That's a radical left-wing word for anything that they find objectionable. They call it offensive. It offends them. This is not about offensive lyrics. You see, she misses the point on purpose. The entire structure of rap music is offensive. It's not that all of Shakespeare is offensive. Sure, you can pull a word out here and there and it might be offensive, but it's not about Shakespeare's literacy that we're arguing. We're arguing about the illiteracy of the individuals that the Obamas invited into our White House and debased it by inviting these individuals into the White House and calling it poetry. Of course, that would take a little degree of thought to come up with what I just said. And so, sure, hip-hop may reflect the current situation in urban ghettos. So, big deal. Does that make it poetry? No. It makes it a political statement, not poetry. But this is what the radical vermin on the left have done to our universities over the last 20 years. They have destroyed the English language itself. They have let people who they let into the universities who never qualified to even be there in the first place. They rigged up the exams. They destroyed standards. They brought in people who could never qualify to be in a university for many different reasons. And they said, now you're a student. So when the student couldn't keep up with the class, they lowered the common denominator down to the level of the student. And suddenly they gave the student the ammunition by saying, oh, do you find it offensive that they're forcing you to read Shakespeare, a white male? Well, why don't you tell them how you see the world in your own words? The next thing you know, you wake up, click, click. There is the president of the United States, himself a product of all of this, by the way, ushered along every step of the way because of the political expediency of the radical left and the acquiescence of all those who knew better. And there we now see what he does when he's in the White House. He degrades and denigrates it on a daily basis. And so there we are. I say things as I see them. It gets me in trouble. I am banned from the excellent dental care of my British cousins can experience. I've been dying to go over there now for 2 years to have my teeth fixed, but unfortunately I won't be able to do that. And of course, I would have loved to have gone for a nice tour of the British cuisine, but that's not going to happen.
Savage.
For more information on this and other great talk programs, go to talkradionetwork.com.
A world without children, can you? A world without their smiles or their laughter. A world where children don't play or sing or dream or imagine.
At St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, we can't imagine a world without children. That's why we're working every day to find cures for diseases that strike down children everywhere. Diseases like cancer, pediatric AIDS, and sickle cell. And we won't stop until every child is cured and every disease is defeated. Because we can't imagine a world without children, can you?
Finding cures, saving children. St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. To learn how you can help, call 1-800-931-0800 or log on to our website, stjude.org.